Alright, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts Matt and Tim. And welcome. Welcome to... Wait, did we do it? Did we actually do it? I think we did. Episode 15!
Yay!
Oh my god.
We Episode are now 14 officially... really tried to fuck itself over, though, and screw you guys.
I know, Skype attacked us for the last god episode.
Yeah, about that. Yeah, what? Did we ever find out what happened? Like, did Skype just say, you know what,
Skype
I'm going to drop these calls, or drop this call?
Skype just decided to take a massive shit. That's pretty much what happened there. Thankfully, we have backup recording.
Tim, you ended up sounding like a robot at one point, like you got taken over by Transformers or something. It was weird.
Yeah, it got pretty... Thankfully, though, we do have the... We've now started integrating other programs to help create backup files and stuff so that we don't have to rely... We just use Skype to make sure everybody's on the same page and not going, huh, what did you say? Wait, is it my turn? So, it's a nice tool to have, but yeah. So, we're finally out of the shadow, officially, of the original... broadcast of the SLS Cast.
We did 14, the original broadcast.
Yes,
we did 14 of them. Yeah. So we're now at 29 episodes.
29 total episodes, but of our reboot, we are now officially out of the shadow of, you know, 14 shows. We are now officially into the vein of the new show, free and clear of the original.
We're high school freshmen, you guys. We're 15.
Woo! Cue the Simpsons guy. Cue that Simpsons. Simpsons. Cue the Simpsons kid again, you know?
Hey!
Hey now! Why don't you go and get your own podcast?
The whole episode.
Yes!
See? What was that guy's name?
I have no idea.
In real life or the Simpsons characters? Because I don't know either. But
he was the okay. He was the chef or the waiter.
He was a like maitre d'.
Yeah, the maitre d'.
No idea. All right. So, how's everybody been doing? How was your Portland trip, Mr. Mikey?
It was good. It was beautifully rainy when I got up there, and then for the second day, and then it was just nice and overcast and cool. And I walked around and I drank a lot of coffee, and I didn't get to go to any of the places you gave me because I just didn't have the time and resources to really get
around.
You're
at the Burnside
so
Skate Park,
the light
and you can't
rail
walk
to,
four blocks down. You can't
Beaverton.
Walk four...
Uh-huh. Late, yeah. The light rail to Beaverton. I swear to God, I'm going to make that damn country song. The light rail to Beaverton.
And then I didn't see your tweet about being near Hop Louie.
House of Louie.
House of Louie until like I was already gone. I was like, oh well, god dang it. But I did get to explore, and you know, just I did what I wanted to do, which is just kind of like live, and I just walked around and just like acted as if I lived there, and it was glorious.
Outstanding. That is just, you know, so much fun. So yeah. So glad that you got to do that. And again, a thank you to Andy for joining us last week. That was very cool of him. We were glad he was here. Hope he can come back in and, you know, partake of the show.
And review some more documentaries.
Absolutely.
More historical documentaries.
That's right. Drive him up a freaking wall. So, is it the SLS? No!
I will not watch another documentary about art.
I refuse to learn. So, you know.
Was that a Dalek refusing to learn?
Refuse to learn.
No, but it was a lot of fun. I'm glad he was able to come.
Yeah.
Indeed. So good. Glad you enjoyed your sojourn, as I called it last week, to Portland. What about you, Tim? What you been doing, sir?
Not much. Finally got a might have gotten a job. I have to call the guy tomorrow at a special effects and prop house out here in California. Out in, I think it's Sundown, California, off of 210.
Sunland.
Yes, Sunland. Okay. So I'll be there. Hopefully,
well,
there's going to be.
I certainly hope you figure this out by the time it's official, because it's going to be like, damn, I couldn't remember what city you were in. I'm sorry, you know, but I'm here now.
Sunland, was that in Portland? Oh, next to Beaverton.
Yeah, it's on the light rail to Beaverton.
Going on the light rail to Beaverton.
Outstanding. All right, well, I'm getting through the last vestiges of my cold or whatever the hell was keeping me down last week. I guess I'm also just getting old and, you know, there's the pollen is just, like, coating. Like, it doesn't matter what color your car is. Currently, your car is yellow, okay? That is how bad the pollen is out here, and apparently it is affecting my nose nowadays. But
is it, you know, coating your nose?
Yeah,
coating
it is. Your mouth? It's great. So, I mean, I feel much better, and for the most part, I think I sound pretty normal again, but, I mean, I definitely know I've got a little bit of the nasal blockage or the sinus blockage.
I will say, last week, you were kind of Eeyore-y with it. Very, like, depressing. I was listening to the episode while I was editing it, and I was just like, I feel bad right now.
Like, Matt. We need to go find the tail and pin it back on him, man.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling much better this week. I might not sound 100%, but I am definitely feeling way better.
Maybe we can be sponsored by Mucinex.
Yeah, and then after that we can be like
is it Mucinex
or Mucilex? No, it's Mucinex. But then there's Muesli too, the cereal, Muesli, whatever, Mucilex.
Ooh, yeah. A cereal?
Yeah, Mucilex.
Like a cereal.
It's like a granola cereal.
Yeah, it's kind of like a granola-y cereal. It's got almonds and raisins.
And it's called Mucilex.
Yeah, Mucilex, yeah. And then there's another one's like Muesli, something. So we could like shift. See, so when we're sick, we can be covered by the phlegm people, and then when we're well and promoting health, then we can be doing the Mucilex cereal, and it still kind of sounds all the same. That's not good advertising at all. Anyway, so I guess everybody's all well and good. So that's all nice and well. I also got my. Professors all on board for my trip next month, so that's all taken care of. They're all like, oh, thanks for letting us know ahead of time, so since you're doing that, we'll totally work with you, and you can do anything that you might miss when you get back. So I was like, sweet.
Cool.
And with that, how about the little bit of news that we have?
News, 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 news.
News, 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 news. Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
Me, because I've been waiting for 3 weeks on this one. So we're throwing it in there now. All right, so this is just a selection, okay, of some of the stuff. This is from crack.com from a few weeks back, but I've been hanging on to it because it hasn't been, you know, something that's really newsworthy, but just something that's kind of interesting and fun. Crack.com has a list of 29 famous movie scenes with glaring mistakes. Okay, and it kicks off very well. From Raiders of the Lost Ark, here we have, to picture the scene at the beginning of the movie when Harrison Ford is, you know, he's in the temple and, he's about to do the whole sandbag thing where he weighs the sand out and all that stupid stuff. Okay, no one ever really thinks about this, but here's the glaring mistake: you're a treasured idol. Protected by spike traps, bottomless pit, poison darts, and a crushing boulder, right? Yet, we can't forget to leave us a large hole in the ceiling for the sunlight to stream in. That's right.
Yeah.
That does kind of defeat the purpose of having a cavern.
But it paints a pretty picture.
Also, it makes Indiana Jones seem pretty dumb because it's like you couldn't find that hole up on top of that mountain.
Exactly. Exactly. Drop down. So
didn't they do like a scene from this in what's the Charlie Sheen
Hot Shots?
Yeah, didn't they do like a scene in this in Hot Shots?
No, they did it in UHF.
Oh, in that's right. Yeah,
UHF. It's how UHF starts. Okay, so another one from the list, which I thought was really hilarious. Okay, in The Sound of Music, the Von Trapp family escapes the Nazis by crossing the border at Salzburg. Okay, so if you cross the border of the Alps, you must head west, okay? West of Salzburg via the Alps puts you directly into Germany. They may have escaped.
Oh, that's a great surprise for them.
They may have escaped the wrong way.
So, well, what do they know? It's a bunch of kids.
Exactly.
And they're singing the entire time, so they'll be spotted like three hills away. That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
Because the hills are alive with Nazis.
Exactly. Of course, you know, and again, still sticking with Raiders of the Lost Ark, a large German military operation in Egypt in 1936? Wait a minute. What about the large military, the large British military operation in Egypt in 1936? That probably would have seen and had some objections to that. Because historically, the British were already there in Egypt to guard the Suez Canal. So, how did the Germans get in? Exactly. That's right. Craziness, craziness, craziness. Then you have the electric guitar that Marty's playing at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance.
Okay. Yeah.
That is a Gibson ES-335. However, okay, the actual guitar, the Gibson ES-335, did not come out until 1958, which is 3 years after the Enchantment Under the Sea dance.
Oh, they lied.
I know. So,
bitch. McFly!
Yeah. And then, of course, for The Matrix, all right, we have the whole scene where Joe Pantolonio is talking to Keanu Reeves, and he's like, I don't even see the code. All I see is blonde, brunette, redhead, right? And they're looking at streaming code.
Yeah.
And if you actually add up all of the lines of code that are floating on the screen, it's less than one single kilobyte of information. So
I'm not
even enough to make
guy.
A strand of hair.
That's some nerdy-ass shit.
Yeah.
Huh. Sorry. That's just...
That's over my
head.
Oh,
well, actually, if you read through all the code and then you input the data into this, it's only one. Okay,
why don't you go get your own matrix? All right.
The matrix code is higher density than normal human code. The
Still.
Matrix is coded in a hexadecimal encrypted bilateral.
Hey, you know, I mean, thing. We're just, as long as we're picking apart things. Okay.
Yeah, I know. And I was pretty pissed off when I found out that the shade of green they used for the matrix code was like, God, like five shades of green off. They got the hue all wrong.
Yes, of course. Of course. Here's another good one for you. The whole Bible in Braille consists of 39 volumes. Okay?
Jeez.
So, in the Book of Eli, Eli's protecting 1/39th of the Bible.
Oh, okay. Okay, for a second there, I thought the Book of Eli was actually a book in the Bible.
Oh.
Because I...
No, it's just a really bad movie.
Yeah.
Now, everybody remembers the shot of the Empire State Building getting blown up in Independence Day, right?
You know,
shoots down, and that's the big scene where everybody's on the street, and they're all, and then they have to run away, and somehow the dog manages to get by through the tunnel and all that stuff, right? Okay,
right.
So that shot is actually impossible, because the Empire State Building and the surrounding area, because of the grid that Manhattan's laid out on, the streets don't run to that building. They run beside it. So.
How do they not get this? I mean, you know that they have pictures. I mean, it's just ridiculous what movies do just for that, the cool shot, you know? So, well, we'll piss off everybody in New York City, but people in Cleveland, Ohio won't care.
Not those,
I
yeah,
think
who
that's...
gives a shit about those hippies in New York City?
I mean, to be fair,
money
though. To,
and their fancy education.
To be
and
fair.
Their photographs.
To Independence Day. To be fair to the movie. The movie came out in, like, 96.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now just talking about this mistake nearly 20 years later. So, we must have done something right.
I mean, honestly, this list only proves how good these movies are in general because you don't care about the mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
It makes up
and
for it in every
this
other
is,
aspect.
This is a pretty good one that I was very disappointed in myself that I did not catch. Okay? During the Tumblr chase scene in Batman Begins, when they're going all over the roofs of the buildings and all that kind of shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is a particular cop... Okay, that tells Batman to turn off his engine and step away from his car.
Mm-hmm.
All right. 1 minute and 27 seconds later, the exact same cop is in a different car asking a dispatcher to tell him what Batman's car looks like.
Maybe he has short-term memory loss.
Maybe. You know, I was just really upset that I didn't catch this. And this one in particular, kind of really destroyed my childhood. All right. Superman, the original Superman movie. Okay? We have an alien from an English-speaking planet that can defy Earth's gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Fine. Let's live with that. But when he's standing in his little A pose on the side of a building, his cape also defies gravity. And we just can't have that. So that kind of hurt my childhood right now.
It's just like the space wind.
Yes. And from Top Gun, okay, in the greetings scene where they're flipping off the MiG.
Yeah.
And they take the Polaroid.
Let's see. Your vibrator went off.
All right. So, in order for that shot to actually take place, okay, the tail fins of the aircraft would have overlapped and intersected, which would have caused them to break apart and explode. So, in point of fact, that scene could have taken place, but they would have had to have been about another 4 feet away from each other, which would have totally destroyed the shot.
So. I wonder how many pilots try to recreate that same exact thing, and it didn't work too well for them when they did. Well, they did in Top Gun. It's got to be accurate somehow.
I'm sure. Sure, yeah. And of course, after Agent Coulson dies in the Avengers,
mm-hmm.
Tony Stark's chest light goes out.
Really?
Yeah.
Now I got to go watch that.
Yeah. And so another Robert Downey, Sherlock Holmes. The first one, the chase scene at the end of the first movie, starts in the sewers under Parliament and ends about a minute later at the top of Tower Bridge. Okay? See, the problem is that Tower Bridge is about 2.5 miles away from the Parliament building.
Fast running, man.
It was a time dissolve.
They also somehow crossed onto the other side of the River Thames as well, despite the nearest and only under river tunnel being even further away than that 2.5 miles. So, yeah.
Damn your logic.
I know. And everybody, of course, remembers Marty McFly, the whole Back to the Future thing.
Mm-hmm.
The iconic license plate, out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. Turns out the California plates can only have 7 characters.
Yeah. That one I did know.
I did not know that, actually. That was... pretty funny. And then, of course, the movie The Piano, George tells Ada that he is illiterate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But she burns a written love note into a piano key to be delivered to him.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So how's that that's gotta hit, you know? Thanks for giving me something that I'll never be able to understand or share with anyone.
It's the sentiment. He knows. He recognizes her loops of her foreign things she's writing down, and he's just, oh, the love is there.
Oh, yeah. So, also, in The Goonies, so here's another one. In The Goonies, Mikey finds a 1973 Topps Lou Gehrig baseball card in Chester Copperpot's wallet. Okay? Remembering, of course, that Chester Copperpot's body had been where they found it since the 1930s.
that's a real bad one.
Yeah.
Wow, wow, wow.
Now, Time Cop. Now, as cheesy as Time Cop was, I did like this movie, okay? And even I didn't catch this, all right? Even a Time Cop should have been surprised to see the reflection of Vancouver's Harbor Center, opened in 1977, in the window of a building supposedly on Wall Street, New York City in 1929. However, admittedly, plunging down the outside of the building at the time may have been a distraction. they have, this is probably one of my favorites, one of my personal favorites here, is they've got 4 different pictures of Jesus from 4 of the best movies about Christ.
Mm-hmm.
With, with Willem Dafoe and, Jim Caviezel and stuff, right? And each of the 4 pictures, not a white guy. So Jesus was not a white guy. Let's remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here.
He was Tejano.
Let's see. We have patches on insignias on jackets in Star Trek: The Motion Picture from the final bridge scene. They're switching places, so that's that's fun. At the time that Pocahontas the movie is supposed to take place, when Pocahontas and John Smith all meet and fall in love and the whole thing of the Disney movie, right?
You're talking about the animated one?
Yes, the animated one, the Disney one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Pocahontas was 10 or 11 years old at the time.
Yeah.
And then they have an arrow pointing to John Smith that says, seriously, dude, 10 or 11. The number one, however, is Django Unchained. Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Throughout the movie, Django wears sunglasses, which were not introduced to the United States until 1929.
Well, that's because he was one cool motherfucker. Fucking had his own pair of sunglasses. Come on now. That was easy.
It's a Quentin Tarantino movie. You know you can't take, you know... It's like saying, well, in that movie, Will Smith used a rap song, and rap didn't come around until 1980, yada, yada, yada. it's a Quentin Tarantino movie.
There you go. And again, I think I did about 13 of them or so, 13 or 14 of them. I did close to half of them. So these were 29 famous movie scenes, so I didn't get them all. Feel free to go to crack.com, look them up, and check it out. I think they're pretty funny. They cover a lot of different movies, so yeah.
All right.
Oh, and in other news, one other piece of news that I just realized I remembered, I saw a trailer yesterday because I went and saw Incredible Burt Wonderstone yesterday, and I saw a trailer. Apparently, Stephanie Meyer wrote other books. I didn't know that she did this. What the fuck is wrong with this woman?
Oh, The Host?
The Host.
And now they're doing a movie, called The Host.
Based on one of her books, or did she just write that screenplay?
No, she wrote the book, and the book came out in between, like, the second and the third, I don't know, in between Twilight books.
Yeah, I'm scared. Hold me. So, that's my news.
Big name people in that movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Diane Kruger and...
And basically, it's just Twilight with aliens.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and the same crummy special effects.
Same crummy special effect, although the love triangle will probably be a little bit easier, considering one part of the love triangle is inside one person who's already part of the love triangle. So that ought to be a little bit easier to deal with this
time.
Meyer.
All right, so I have... did any of you guys watch Veronica Mars?
Heck yeah.
Briefly.
I never
briefly.
Did, but now that I actually know more about what the show was, like I just thought it was kind of a chick show at the time. I'm really interested in watching it, especially since they're planning on doing a movie, and this show hasn't been on the air in years. And they decided that the film's creator, as well as... what's her name?
Kristen Bell.
Yeah, Kristen Bell. They decided to use this program called the Kickstarter program online, so that if the fans really want to see a... Veronica Mars feature-length movie, they can basically fund the film by donating money. Well, it looks like the movie made over, I think, $2 million or over $2 million, but that was like the goal that they were trying to make.
Yeah.
And this is according to The Wrap, and this is, you know, according to the report, and I quote, "The film's production budget will come entirely from the money it raised on Kickstarter." Oh, and I forgot to say that Warner Brothers decided to greenlight the movie. It's going to only use the money that it raised on Kickstarter. It won't include any additional funding from the studio, Warner Brothers. The individual told The Wrap, "Warner Brothers Digital Distribution will shoulder the costs of distributing the film and marketing it to the Veronica Mars faithful." So it sounds like, you know, this movie is actually going to go through with it and be funded basically off of the money that it received from the program. That means Kristen Bell's not going to make a lot of money. And they're probably just going to spend this money only on just putting the movie together, and it will be just Warner Brothers that distribute it. And that's pretty fascinating, and it's pretty great, especially since this is kind of, in a way, how they did with like the movie Serenity after Firefly got canceled some years ago. However, a lot of people are wondering if Firefly will come back, if either they'll use this Kickstarter program to either do a new series or do another Serenity-type sequel. However, Joss Whedon was being interviewed. I forget what he was being interviewed on, but he was saying that it probably won't happen. I mean, it would take... I mean, to get the entire cast together, you have like Nathan Fillion, who's on Castle, so he's busy doing that. Joss Whedon is stuck for the next 3 years working on the next Marvel Avengers movie. I mean, he's consulting for all the movies, so he's doing all that stuff. I mean, he even had a shelf Dr. Horrible 2 just because of what he's all preoccupied on with going on right now. And that's all, this is all stuff that's, you know, that's going on in the future. I mean, you have to deal with, you know, actors getting older and people losing interest in the movie, so that's probably not going to happen. Another good thing about this Veronica Mars movie is that it's a good thing that that Warner Brothers is doing this, because they might even be able to turn quite a huge profit on the movie, since they're only going to be handling the distribution costs. I mean, they can get, I mean, the return on it could be great, especially if the movie's good, if it keeps the whole noir spy thriller mystery tone that I'm told that the series has. If it gets people involved that haven't seen the show.
It's Warner Brothers digital distribution. So that mean, is it going to come out in theaters actually, or is it going to go just straight online, like video on demand and stuff?
That's the thing. I'm not too sure. Is that it might be video on demand. I mean, it just depends. Since it's just going to be, you know, the movie. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it just depends, like, how many people really get into it. Because it might be. I know they've been doing a lot of movies like this. One of them, for some reason, this popped in my head. Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie. That movie was released on demand, and then it came out to select movie theaters for, you know, for a couple weeks or something. And it seems like they're going
to do it that way.
Exactly. And another really good movie that I loved was Mel Gibson's Get the Gringo. And that movie came out on video on demand. And I don't know how well it did, but as much as I wanted it to see that movie at the movie theater, when I saw it, probably wouldn't have done as well as it would have done, you know, being on video on demand. So that's exciting. Probably no Firefly, but we get Veronica Mars, so that's a...
Also, you have to consider the fact that Firefly, you know, being sci-fi and having all the CG and the set is going to...
Exactly.
You know, if they did try to do a Kickstarter on it, it'd have to be a $20 million, you know, on the low end, as opposed to a $2 million movie with, you know, Veronica Mars is, oh, we're going to do like a film noir with teenagers or them grown up now, just on a seaside city.
Exactly, and actually, I meant to mention that before. Yeah, it just, I mean, just the effects and the costs, and it doesn't matter if, you know, if people are working for a small price, it costs money to do all this stuff, and to build sets and build props, and I'm sure they have to rebuild the entire ship, and, you know, 3D modeling and all that stuff, and... You know, probably make it in 3D, since that's kind of the new popular thing nowadays, is, you know, every movie being made in 3D. So, yeah, unfortunately not. However, like a Firefly-esque animated or CGI movie would be kind of cool.
An animated, if they just rebooted the show, but as an animated show, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of like with, like, Star Wars, whatever that Star Wars animated
show
is. Yeah,
the Clone Wars.
Yeah, yeah. And... There's also talks, on another note, also talks of the Batman reboot storyline. Apparently, there's, I guess, a comic that's been ongoing for a couple years. I'm not too sure. I'm not in the comic book realm. I just hear about it.
Okay.
And read about it, but it's like the 0-year Batman comics. I don't know, Mikey, if you know.
Oh,
anything.
Yeah. So, DC did a... well, there's year one.
Right.
One of them. And then there's, I think it's maybe year one. Year one is the one that's kind of like Batman Begins, where it's like, it's more in-depth
in
of like his beginning years.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. And then
there's actually a cartoon. Yeah, they released like a cartoon. Well, in the year one, that was also, wasn't that a graphic novel?
Yeah.
Or was it a comic?
It was, Well, a comic is a graphic novel. A graphic novel is just a collection of single-issue comics.
I'm back.
Okay.
Sorry, I did. Did you get my text, the little thing I sent in the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to cut you off so we didn't have to stop recording or anything.
That's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's cool.
And a graphic novel does not always indicate a collection
of
comics.
But in most situations...
Generally, yes, but you can write exclusively for as a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's being rumored that this zero year storyline, whatever that is, will be the new storyline to the new Batman reboot. And this is coming from the writer Scott Snyder, who says it's time for a new story showing how Batman became who he is in the new 52. It builds up the mythology.
Oh. And oh, so I know what you're talking about now. Sorry. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, I have. I mean, if you know more about this, please explain, because I mean, I don't know what else. Like, what else to the origin of the story that hasn't already been talked about? He also goes on to say that it's not, let's do the origin, and this is quoting, we try to preserve as much of Batman's history as we could and keep what we could of his story intact. It's the 0 year, the one that no one has told the story of before. We see how Bruce became the Batman, built the cave, faced off with his first supervillain. So I guess it's doing, explaining all the stuff that most of the movies just kind of skip telling you, like him building stuff.
There's actually a good animated series that covers, I think it's called Year One, though, instead of Year Zero.
The movie you're talking about, right? The animated movie?
Yeah,
that's what we were talking about, yeah.
Yeah, does a really good job of explaining that.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because that movie is heavily on Jim Gordon more than Batman, even.
Right, and I just don't see why they just can't just keep going on. I mean, we already know what the hell happened. I mean, do we need to, like, with every single reboot, do we need to go back and revisit the origin for the sake of the reboot, or can we just move on with it?
I don't know. I really think that at this point they have they really only have two options. One, continue with the kick in the bail of trying to get Joseph Gordon-Levitt to come on. Or to set the mythos in an alternate universe, Batman-wise, and then just have an independent Batman who's already there.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And since you mentioned kicking the bell, we're going to go and introduce a new segment to kind of go along with this little news item that we call kicking the bell. It's called kicking the bell because of the rumors that Michael Bay. Been talking about Michael Bay so much that I'm getting Christian Bale mixed up with him. That a Christian Bale might come back to play Batman in the Justice League movie that they're putting together because of Christopher Nolan's involvement with The Man of Steel, which is coming out here in a couple months. Therefore, he might be involved with the new Justice League movie. Therefore, Christian Bale might be in the Justice League as Batman again, even though he said in numerous interviews that he would never play Batman, because more than likely, we'll probably even have a Robin in the Justice League, and it just kind of goes against the whole Batman Begins mythos that Christian Bale and Nolan has created. So this is a rumor that will never come into fruition. This is something that will never come to fruition. Therefore, it is rumor that for some reason people just love talking about for the sake of they keep having wet dreams about it every night, apparently. And that's why we call it Kicking the Bell. And that is the Kicking the Bell segment.
Yay! Kicking the Bell! Okay.
Am I
in the 80s.
I know. Oh, that'd be awesome. Just get some guitar riffs going and some... I don't get a good, like, Deep Purple cover of it. Kicking the bell! My last bit of news is that... Yeah. It's more of an annoyance, really. I'll just go ahead and say it. It's not really news. But it's an article I read where the person writing the article was talking about how Jennifer Lawrence, she could play Han Solo, even though... there will never be a girl to play Han Solo. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm against girls playing, you know, macho characters or, you know, suave, cool characters or anything like that. It's just Han Solo is Han Solo, unless they bring in, like, a Hannah Solo or something like that. But she will never play Han Solo in what people are saying, the standalone Han Solo movie that will be coming out and / made somewhere in the near future. And so this article just kind of went on and saying how Jennifer Lawrence would be the best Han Solo, even though she will never be the Han Solo. So I don't know. What's the point of reading it and writing something about something that obviously will never absolutely happen? Again, just kind of a wet dream. I mean, we all know Jennifer Lawrence is a spunky actress who takes on comedic roles, and she's really talented, but... That's Han Solo. I mean, we don't.
You know what that does spark in me, though, is the thought boner? Of, oh, boy, the boner. That's a spark. Jesus Christ, it's full sail right now. But it makes me think that in future Star Wars movies, like, so they get past 7, so maybe 8, maybe 9, we'll say, if they decide to go along with the expanded universe in the books and they have Han and Leia have the kids, mm-hmm. maybe Jennifer Lawrence could play Jaina Solo, which is one of the daughters, which is the daughter, the only one. And because I think, you know, if they think she's would be such a badass Han Solo, why couldn't she be a badass Han Solo's daughter and also be a Jedi at the same time because she has Force powers? I would love to see a movie with Jennifer Lawrence with a lightsaber kicking ass.
I don't know. I gotta say, I really think that some of this stuff is really just feeding the machine, more or less.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just to keep people talking about it so that it keeps the, so that it keeps interest up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's where I think this one is coming from, this particular one.
So. Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. It's just, what's the point? I mean, it's like, it literally just reminds me of something like The Onion would put together. Ish. That's the news!
And that's the way it was.
Alright.
So, 3 squared then. 3 squared this week is going to be about our favorite prequels, okay? And a prequel is basically a movie that comes out after the first movie in a franchise, but takes place before the first movie in a franchise. So, alternate universes notwithstanding, the first, I guess I'll go first. For me, I picked 3 because that's the assignment.
I feel that dig towards me a little bit.
That Matt will go first?
No. That he said he picked 3 because that was the assignment.
Actually, I just picked 3. I said that and realized how retardedly obvious that is, because it's called 3 squared, where each of us picked 3. Apparently, except for you, who must be feeling some kind of guilt about picking more than 3, so perhaps you should back it down. I'm just saying.
No, not gonna happen.
It's okay. Matt has a cold, and Michael has cabin fever.
No, I don't have cabin fever.
Apartment fever.
No, I was Doggy out today. Fever. I started my job today. That's besides
what
the point,
job?
Matt.
I didn't know you had a job.
We'll talk about it later. Don't worry okay. about it. 3 squared.
3 squared, okay, so. The good, the bad, and the ugly. That is my first one. Now, this one is truly one of the greatest because it really kind of it's part of the, the Fistful of Dollars trilogy. I guess the Dollars trilogy.
Wait, isn't it the Man with No Name trilogy?
Yes.
You could, it is known as both.
Okay.
The Man with No Name trilogy and the Dollars trilogy, because the first movie in the trilogy is called A Fistful of Dollars. Mm-hmm. The second movie in the trilogy is called For a Few Dollars More.
Okay.
So it's also known as the... So at any rate, so this actually goes into the actual... It shows how each character kind of... Or each primary character kind of came to be going into A Fistful of Dollars. And it's really kind of cool because Eastwood is kind of picking up his outfit as he goes in this one. So, he's basically just becoming more iconic as he follows along. So I just think that's just a really, really good one. The second one is going to be 1984's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which... I kind of got introduced to the whole thing backwards, okay, when I was a kid, because I'm not exactly sure how it all worked out, but this was the first one that I saw, was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Then, I got a little older, watched Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then I went and saw Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade in the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, I never realized that Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was a prequel because I saw that one first. And because I saw that one first and I thought it was so badass, I've always thought it was the best one. I thought it was... Well, it's number two because it's both second and not as good as Last Crusade. But for me, it was my introduction to it, so I always thought it was better than Raiders of the Lost Ark. Just blame it on me being a kid and not knowing any better, okay? Because a lot of fans, while they love Temple of Doom, they admit that it's not anywhere near as good as Raiders of the Lost Ark. Final movie for me is the movie that came out last year, or I guess Christmas of 2011?
Yeah.
Prometheus, the prequel to Alien.
No, it came out last summer.
Was it last summer? Okay.
Yeah, it was last summer. June, I think. Yeah, June.
Yes, that's right, because my dad and I went and saw it in the theater when he came down for my daughter's birthday. So, yeah. Okay.
So I thought I heard when he came down for money.
No. My dad's way better off than I am. So he would not come down here for money. Yeah, and so I don't know. The great prequels. I had a couple more that I actually had to move up Temple of Doom. Temple of Doom was not initially on my list. And I kept replacing it with movies that you guys picked. So, lay it on us. Who's next?
Mikey, I'll go. Do you want to mend your wounds?
I have no real wounds. Okay. Anyway, my number one, I'm just going to go one. Yeah. My number one is Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. Because while it's still in the vein of those prequels that people didn't love, it is the best one. Because it is just all out great action. You finally get to see the transformation from Anakin Skywalker into Frankenstein Vader. No!
Falcon Vader.
But it's, yeah, I mean, of those prequels, which I would say it was very impactful for me because they came out when I was a teenager, and so I was like, I got to have that Star Wars experience of, like, when they originally came out, but I, you know, they weren't as good. But still, Revenge of the Sith was fucking amazing.
Did you cry?
No, I didn't cry. What am I, a woman?
Whoa.
I am a horrible person, but... That's another episode. My second one is, I think 2 years ago it came out, I believe, is the Rise of the Planet of the Apes with James Franco and Andy Serkis as every monkey. And it's just, yeah, it was good. I didn't expect it to be as good as it was. And it's real good. Just, yeah. And then my final one is a collection, because they all kind of go together, because they're the same movie pretty much. It's the Fast and the Furious. All of them, Fast and the Furious, Fast and Furious 2, I mean, or I should say Too Fast, Too Furious, Fast and Furious, Four Faster, Four Furiouser.
The Fastest and the Furious.
The Most Furious Fast. All those movies are prequels.
Those prequels?
Those are all prequels to the third movie that actually was released, which is Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. When you look at the actual, like, in-movie chronology timeline, Tokyo Drift is the one that takes place the furthest. Not, I guess, not in the future, but, you know, latest in time.
In 2008, the future...
I mean, it's in Japan, so that city's pretty much always in the future, so, you know, it fits into any sort of futuristic timeline.
We like to Tokyo. Do they actually drift in Tokyo? I mean, is it like a real thing?
Tokyo I've never drifting? Been. I know drifting is a thing, and it's usually done with cars that are made from Japan. But I don't know. I've never been to Japan.
Yeah, I need to watch this movie since the new one's coming out sometime soon. All right. Well, mine, in no particular order. X-Men First Class that came out a couple years ago. It's a fantastic, I think, my favorite origin story for a superhero movie ever. Because it's just so... I mean, it's funny. It has action. It has great characters. I love Kevin Bacon as the villain. The hot chick from Mad Men. I forget her name.
January Jones.
Yeah, January Jones. She's an ice queen. Fox. She's a foxy queen. Whatever. It's just a really good movie. Great special effects. So tip of the old top hat to Matthew Vaughn for putting that movie together. Next is The Godfather Part 2 with Robert De Niro in 1974. This is obviously the prequel to... It's actually the sequel and the prequel to The Godfather. And this is actually... It's like dual storylines. I mean, it chronicles Pacino's Michael Corleone being the new Don of the Corleone... the new crime family. And, you know, kind of like going through the business and trying to... keep the business running. And it also goes from that to flashbacks of his father.
Hello, Mata. Hello, father.
Hello, Mata. Hello, father.
Vito Corleone. Smoking marijuana.
Marijuana. No. It talks about his childhood throughout Sicily in the early 1900s, and it's about him kind of founding the whole Corleone empire, the whole dynasty, I guess.
Tim. For my own, like, sake of Italian pride, can you please say Corleone?
Corleone.
Okay, thank you.
Are you Italian?
Yes.
What's your last name?
Petrella.
Oh, I guess that's Petrella. I thought you were a WOP or something. Oh, you are a WOP.
Yeah. You know
okay,
what WOP is?
He gets the bonus points today of knowing what WOP actually stands for.
Without papers?
That is correct.
I just learned that yesterday.
Seriously?
Yeah, I seriously did.
That's hilarious.
We were talking about WOP salads, and I was like, I had no idea WOP salad was named after.
That's right. That. It was because there was such a when they first arrived, there were so many fresh off the boat that
Bob's.
Were illegal. They did not have any papers. Without yeah. papers.
After the Irish, they need somebody else to harass. And the Polacks. Polacks always got harassed. And my third favorite prequel was. A Brett Ratner movie, Red Dragon from 2002. That's the Anthony Hopkins and Edward Norton movie. That's the prequel to Silence of the Lambs. And it's actually a remake, which we all talked about this earlier, the movie Manhunter from the 1980s. I think that's when it came out.
Something like that.
Yeah, it also has Anthony Hopkins in it and Red Dragon, and it's really good. Graphic... suspenseful, a great storyline. It was well shot and just it looks fantastic, and I highly recommend it. It's wonderful. So X-Men First Class, The Godfather Part 2, and Red Dragon.
Awesome. Alright, so we had three movies this week. The Man Who Loved Women, The Frighteners, and The Incredible Burt Wonderstone. Let's start off with The Man Who Loved Women.
Ooh. Yes.
Okay, and now, before we go on, I don't know if Tim was going to say this, sorry. It's just that this is not the one that Tim talked about in last week's episode.
No, this
Burt
is the
Reynolds.
Better one out of the two, I have a feeling.
This is the original one that's Francois Truffaut, and it's in French. And because I had to read subtitles and you guys didn't get back to my email early enough, I didn't watch it because I would have fallen asleep.
Well,
I replied to your email.
I sent you a text. Eventually,
but,
I did.
Yeah, late in the night.
Well, you missed out. Actually, I think you missed out. Well, see, okay, so The Man Who Loved Women is basically about I wouldn't necessarily call him a womanizer.
He's a sex addict.
Yeah, exactly. He just loves women. He has a thing about women's legs, and you know the legs really make the women. And he goes on, and this is a guy that's never been turned down by any woman ever, except one. Well, throughout the beginning of the movie, he becomes infected by this woman that he just wants to be with, wants to converse with. He can't find her. I mean, she's from Montreal, and was unable to track her down. Then there's this other woman that he just is absolutely in love with. However, she's not into men her age. She's into younger boys, and she's older, I guess, in her late 40s or so. So this kind of inspires him in a way to write a book about his encounters with these women, which he calls The Skirt Chaser. And it's basically just chronicling who he is, how he became who he is, with his ill relationship with his mother and how she treated him, and how she was actually used by men, and she was addicted to sex herself, and he kind of witnessed it, and she was just very a very bad mother, just having him sit in one place, only reading. She couldn't say a word. She would be changing in front of him, being practically naked in front of him. He would always see the guy she was with, and every guy that she had been with, she would keep pictures of every single one of them, and he kind of adopted that as well. He kept pictures of all the ladies he was with. And so this movie kind of chronicles how his character develops and how he developed into writing the book, and how he became the person who he is, and how it actually became how it destroyed his life, to where it's kind of like this disease that had become of him, to where he can't control himself. And this movie was a French comedy drama. It has some wonderful scenes in it, spectacular acting, and it's definitely one of those movies that you watch because you love watching a character grow on you, and watching a character do its thing, watching a character fail or become a better person, seeing if they actually learn anything or not. And this is one of the movies that's directed by François Truffaut, and it stars Charles Denner. And if anybody knows who Truffaut is, he was the one of the directors who founded the French New Wave of films that happened throughout the 1960s and throughout 1958 to 1964. And this kind of inspired Jean-Luc Godard and Jacques Rivette. Those are other renowned French directors. And Truffaut also directed the great 1959 classic, which started this whole French New Wave era with The 400 Blows. And he also did the equally amazing Jules and Jim. This movie, The Men Who Loved Women, came out in 1977, 76, 77. And so it was made during the 1970s sexual obsession era. And it shows the consequences and the reasoning behind the obsession of sex and lust and free love without being tied down and not really having a responsibility, an honest responsibility when it came to love. And the thing with the French New Wave of cinema is that the idea of it is that they had this desire to make films based on the current social and the current political issues that were going on at the time. Like I said, the obsession with sex and being with women and not really having the responsibility of having a healthy relationship. And these are films that were subject in issues that were brought up but never fully realized by the film's end. And I guess what I mean by that is that this idea of the French way of filmmaking is that they talk about things and a subject or the character realizes something. And usually with American cinema, they usually realize what's wrong and it's a happy ending. But usually these movies turn out to bode ill for the people because it's more what they call realistic. And these are the movies that also they took away from the Hollywood film aspect, the classic Hollywood way of movie making throughout the 50s, 40s, even early 60s, and it also took from the Italian neorealism, which took place during the 1940s, started in the 1940s with Luchino Visconti's 1942 movie Obsessione, which was another brand of movie making as well, which that one is all about just establishing mood. The Italians had really good mood movies. And so, just knowing all this stuff going into it is just amazing and awesome to pick out, like, how different French movies, especially, like, these French dramedy movies, are different from how the Hollywood movies that were made around the same period of time, since they do take the time to establish character and develop a wonderful storyline, even though it's based around a womanizer. I mean, you do feel bad for the guy. I mean, he does suffer the consequences, I guess, but they just do a great job at developing a well-rounded character, because when it comes down to it, even though he's a womanizer, he's or a sex addict, he's still a nice guy. I mean, he doesn't use the women. I mean, they pretty much allow him to do whatever with them. I mean, they kind of subject themselves to everything that's going on. So again, The Men Who Loved Women, I highly recommend it. What did you think about it, Matt?
Here's what I think. I think you liked it enough for everybody. Good Lord, you like that movie. you that like that movie a lot. Alright. Okay, it's a well-shot movie. I definitely enjoyed the cinematography of it. And I liked exploring the culture. Because what you see in this movie about how this guy interacts with women and how he really and truly objectifies them, but does it in such an earnest way that they're not offended by it, that's really one of the things that women expect in France. In France, even today, where guys here are like, oh, you don't, you know, we'll sit here as three guys and go, yeah, that chick was hot, you know, oh, she had nice boobies on her tatas, blah, 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 right? But the second a chick walks into the room, it's all hush. You know, you don't say that stuff because that objectifies a woman and she could, you know, she would get offended and, you know, blah, 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 wah, 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 and guys aren't allowed to be guys anymore. That's not the case in France, okay? Women get dressed up because they expect to be looked at. It's expected that men look at them. Not because they want to objectify a woman and treat her as a sex object, but because a woman knows that she has that power to captivate men. And so you get to see this because while this is in 1977, this is still a very big part of their culture today. Now, again, they don't go around talking like, oh, I'm going to fuck you. Oh, you know, hey, let me do, you know, gross things to you, whatever. But it is nothing for a guy to, you know, stare at a chick's ass. And age makes no difference either, which is another dynamic that plays through here because where you have the guy, he's going after all these chicks, and then the one chick who's like, I'm sorry, I only date dudes younger than me. So, to watch that aspect of the culture play out, I thought was really cool. It was neat to see it in cinema, and it was neat to see it in such a well-shot way, especially for 1977. That being said, this farce is way too farcical. And by the end of the movie, it's way too overboard. Because the movie starts out, I mean, spoiler alert, the movie starts out with a funeral. And it's the funeral of the protagonist. So you're like, okay, so then it's this one chick recounting how it comes to be that they're going to this dude's funeral. It is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Spoiler alerts again. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler for this movie, especially if you like this kind of stuff. Homeboy gets hit by a car chasing after two chicks because he likes their legs. Ends up in a hospital because of said chasing after chicks because he's looking at their legs and he can't move. But he's still looking at other nurses' legs and falls out and rips his fucking catheter out and dies.
I will say this real quick. Stupid. Is that I did not like the ending of the movie at all.
Stupid. I'm sorry. It's just, you know, I get that it's a farce. This is a farce, which makes it more... It's more lighthearted. It's not necessarily a dramedy. It's not really, but it is lighthearted. That is where it is a true farce. But I'm sorry, it just got a little too out of hand by the end of the movie for me, and the ending totally destroyed it. So
fair enough.
I gave it 3 stars, but you know, I truly think that you. That you, Tim, really appreciated this movie for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm glad that you did. And with agreeing with you, definitely that it does go overboard. It's just I think I just definitely appreciate it because of the type of movie it is and what the movie does with using cinema as an art form.
True, and again, it's and from the cultural side to actually watch this kind of stuff play out. Was definitely cool. I will definitely give it that. It was definitely interesting to check that out in terms of watching the culture unfold.
Bring up what Mikey was talking about earlier, is that it was remade in 1983. There was an American remake with Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
Which is this one is supposed to be the Italian film we were talking about is the superior between the two.
The French
movie. I thought the Burt Reynolds movie was going to be on Netflix. But however, I'm glad I saw this, because I've always heard about it, especially in the film classes. And just be prepared, guys, because I'm probably going to recommend another Truffaut movie here in the near future, because they both have Jules and Jim, as well as the 400 Blows on Netflix.
I'm not going to lie. You might have to use your one.
Ooh.
These are historic movies, though.
I don't care.
I mean, these are movies you might have to see.
I'm not. I would never see another one of this guy's movies. Based on this movie, so you might have to use your one to get.
That's sad.
I've seen 400 Blows, and I have no desire to see it again.
I'm sorry. This is sad. Every movie person that's listening to this, who's ever studied film, just one cohesive slap on the head.
For whatever it's worth, while I think that. You know, we all agree that all of us have seen quite a few movies, especially you and I, Tim. We have definitely watched our fair share of movies. Yeah. And therefore, we have a pretty good handle on what goes into good movie making.
Right.
To that end, with all due respect, I did not get a degree in film. So you can't, you know, just smack me on the head because I don't want to watch any more movies.
I'm smacking my own head.
So
no, it's cool. No, it's then it all comes down to, you know,
you get one, Tim.
It's cool. I love it.
You get one. We're almost to April. You know, the fact that you held out for three or four months before you used your one make us.
But there are so many other better ones out there. However, I was kind of surprised that you did like what was that, the movie about the nuns I recommended for us to watch a couple years ago, about the nuns in the convent, and one nun started going really crazy. Do you remember? No?
We're going to have to go back to the list. I want to... It's like I can kind of picture what you're telling me in my head, but I can't think of the name of the movie.
Yeah, the name of it's very... It's an off... I mean, like... It's a different title that one wouldn't really expect to go with the movie. Yeah, and there's like that big bell tower on the side of it, and at the end of it, the woman gets pushed off the bell tower and dies. No,
I can't
think of the name. I forgot the name of it. Anyway, okay, we'll move on.
So, okay, well then to the next movie, The Frighteners. The Frighteners, a 1996 comedy horror film directed by Peter Jackson.
Oh.
See?
This is his follow-up to...
produced by...
Zemeckis.
Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah. Robert Zemeckis, yes. Initially, it was supposed to be directed by him, but after looking at the story treatments and stuff, he's like, you know what? We should probably let Peter Jackson do this.
Well, and this was a follow-up to Peter Jackson's Dead something...
Wasn't that
Heavenly Creatures?
Heavenly Creatures, there you go.
Oh, that's right. Well, he did. I'm trying to think of the first movie that he did before Heavenly Creatures was Dead Alive.
That's right.
Gross out, awesome, funny comedy horror movie. Have you ever seen that, Matt?
Dead Alive.
It's in the vein of like Evil Dead kind of where it's
exactly. I think I have seen it. Hang on, I'm pulling it up real quick because that sounds just too familiar.
The cover of it has, like, the woman pulling open her mouth, and there's, like, a creature inside of her mouth.
Brain
Dead. Well, it's... I mean, I think that's what it was called in New Zealand.
Yeah, released as Dead Alive in North America. I don't know. Interesting. No, I guess I haven't seen that one. But I would... I would watch this one.
It's good. I don't think it's on Netflix, though.
Well, I'll have to look it up. Okay, so at any rate, yes. So, back to... before we get too far away. Back to The Frighteners. So, here we have a movie about a guy played by Michael J. Fox, who is basically an architect who loses his wife in a car accident, and as a result, he's able to see dead people. I always kind of looked at this in some kind of backwards way as The Sixth Sense if he grew up.
And, yeah, that makes sense.
And the misadventures of what would happen after he grew up.
The misadventures. Like it's a spunky Saturday morning cartoon or something.
Exactly, exactly. Of course, you know, I remembered this growing up because I was I had such great fun with what's his face? Chi McBride is in this. And John Astin, of course, who was, you know, Gomez from the Addams Family, from the original TV series. And then, of course, you had Michael J. Fox. And actually, in a kind of a creepy way, I thought Jake Busey was interesting in this
movie. Oh, I love that. He's one of my favorite parts. He's my second favorite person in this movie.
And so, I mean, and it was really interesting just how much... You can really see how far special effects have come along since this movie, because these were good effects. They haven't aged very well. They're still decent. I'm not going to say they're poor. They're decent, but they're not as good as they were when it came out.
They're good along with the live action effects that they pair with them, so it helps sell how, you know.
Yes.
Even though they're bad, it works well.
Yes.
I think they need to redo the special effects and release it in 3D.
IMAX 3D.
Honestly, this would be a movie. I truly believe this would be a movie that would be ripe for a remake. This would be, I think, would be a good movie because with the way that special effects are today, you wouldn't even need to do 3D. Of course, they would do 3D, but you wouldn't even need to do 3D. And I think you could do a fantastic job with this today. But at any rate, so Michael J. Fox plays an architect, Frank Bannister, loses his wife. This gives him the result to see dead people. And he uses this ability because he's kind of lost his will to go on, more or less. He's kind of become a con man who uses the dead people that he sees to scare people into thinking they have ghosts. He shows up as a psychic detective and takes care of the problem. Of course... there really is a problem when this mysterious Grim Reaper character kind of comes back and starts murdering people. And it turns out, of course, that this is not just any, quote, Grim Reaper. There's more to the backstory. And then, of course, it all comes to a boiling head where there's a lot of life and death play and then a lot of ghost play and out-of-body experience stuff going on. I don't want to spoil it for you because I really think this is a great movie. But I will say that all's well that ends well. So, you know, if you're one of those bad ending kind of people, you won't have to worry about that here. But it is really cool how it all plays out. So, I don't know. I really enjoyed this movie. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars on Netflix. Again, the special effects haven't aged all that well, but they are not bad. And I think this is a fine example of why Peter Jackson has become the director that he's become.
Yeah, and the movie is just a really good story, and the characters are so great, especially Jeffrey Combs, the eccentric FBI guy. I think that's when the movie takes off, is when his character enters. That's just right then and there is when the movie just goes on.
And I loved him from Star Trek. He was in Star Trek Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, really?
I think he did a little bit of work on Voyager, too.
Yeah, and it's just, like I said, just great characters, and like the whole story progression of the Frighteners is just phenomenal. I just love the whole... Even down to the name of the serial killer. Whatever his name was.
Oh,
Beckman... something, something. It's like the three named.
It's like
Johnny
John
Bartlett,
Henry. Something.
It's Johnny Bartlett.
There you go.
Yeah, Johnny Bartlett, and he was terrific. And I just love the weird relationship between him and the woman. You know, just really creepy. However, I will say that I caught this watching this for like my fifth time, and the first time in like 7 years, I think, last Friday, And it seems to me like the first half of the movie is more of like showing off the special effects than actually using it to progress the storyline. It just seemed like it was like, oh, hey, look what we can do. Just all this crazy special effects. Because to me, the use of the dead ghosts, really, I didn't really see the significance of them, since they all pretty much die by the midpoint of the movie. Oh, spoiler alert. The midpoint of the movie die again, I guess. When the whole basis of the movie, like the meat and bones of it, really takes place literally from the middle of the movie onward. And not saying the beginning of it ruins the movie, because I think it's still a really good setup to it. But, you know, it's just, to me, it just seemed like it was kind of like showing off the special effects before the special effects actually kind of took part in the actual meat and bones of the movie itself. But even though with saying that, the movie is still phenomenal, and, you know, I agree. I mean, even though the special effects did kind of age a little bit, it's just still a wildly entertaining movie to watch, especially with Danny Elfman's score and the cinematography and the use of the character actors and the really creepiness of the tone of the movie is just super entertaining.
I have to agree with both of you. I really enjoyed this. I remember like seeing parts of it as a kid when it probably first came out or came out like on TV or something, and then getting to watch it all the way through was awesome because it was really good. I love how the movie is almost, you know, after that midpoint to maybe three quarters of the way through, the last adventure part when they're in the old abandoned asylum and stuff like that, it's almost like a completely different movie because of how dark it gets and how it's not actually scary, but like it gets really intense.
Right.
You kind of like are on the edge of your seat, like waiting to see what's going to happen. And the first half of the movie is very lighthearted. And it progresses slowly.
Did either one of you guys ever see the House movies? House or House 2?
House? No.
No.
I think we should try and watch one or both of those. Because I think there's elements of both of those movies in this movie.
So. Okay. They're just called House?
Mm-hmm. First one's called House. Second one's called House 2. Very loosely related to the... It is an official sequel, but very loosely related to the first one.
And I will say about The Frighteners is that it did pretty poor at the box office. It made, like, I think altogether, like, $28 million or so.
Yeah, it didn't do that great monetarily, but it did get good reviews. And it was exactly. Based on the strength of this movie that Jackson got King Kong. So, figure that out.
You mean that got the rights to King Kong?
No, that's why he got to direct it.
Well, he didn't direct King Kong until after Lord of the Rings.
I know, but it was based on this project that he got. They gave him, even though he ended up doing, even though it ended up taking 10 years before it came out, he was put into the track for.
Right. Okay.
King
well,
Kong
yeah, yeah, that, yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah, because he was originally going to do King Kong before Lord of the Rings.
Right.
But of computer and CGI and stuff.
And the other weird thing that came out of The Frighteners is was it John Astin? Is that who it is?
Yeah, this guy who played.
He's Sean Astin's father, right? I believe so. Yeah. No. This is how. Yeah. And then Sean Astin's dad, John Astin, told him that, hey, you should work with Peter Jackson, and that's why Sean Astin is in Lord of the Rings.
Huh. Well,
that's a
cool
story that Sean Astin tells, like, on the Lord of the Rings, like, commentary part.
Oh.
Wow. I never knew that. That's really cool. Yeah. Well, very cool. All right. So, last but not least, the Incredible Burt Wonderstone.
I gotta say, I did not know what to expect going into this movie, but I laughed my ass off during a lot of this movie.
This is one of those where I'm glad that I don't watch a lot of movie trailers, and I'm glad I don't have cable anymore, because I only saw this trailer like 3 times before I saw this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, they did show the majority of the funny parts to this movie in the trailer.
I don't know. I don't think
there were other funny parts. There were other funny parts. They did not show all of them, but to me, they showed the majority of them. And there were not a lot of people in the theater when I went and saw this movie. Probably about maybe a dozen other people, but they were having a blast. And I think their collective enjoyment rubbed off on me. And so, yes, I laughed at some parts that I might not have otherwise laughed at. I do think that there's this particular scene where Bert and Anton have had a fight. Anton leaves, and Bert tries to do their entire show on his own. And they have this thing called the Hangman. And it's just, it's a standard it's just a standard switch. You know, it's a standard bait and switch for the trick. But of course, when there's only one person, it's just him. He doesn't even wait for the lights to go out. He just starts walking up to the Hangman's thing and puts the shit on himself. So that was funny. I mean, like I said, there were some funny parts in there that were not in the trailer. Overall, I don't know. I'm just a little tired of seeing Steve Carell play Steve Carell.
Yeah. Well, see, that was the downfall to me.
Yeah. Steve Buscemi did a great job. I was really surprised at Olivia Wilde's job. This is probably the funniest sex scene I've ever seen in my life, and it was intentionally meant to be funny. So that was good. I was definitely impressed with that.
And Alan Arkin, I thought Alan when Alan Arkin was supposed to be dying in the bed, and he throws the smoke. And you see him, like, the camera pans down. He's trying to, you know, like, get underneath the bed as if he's blown away, I guess.
Right.
And it's just, like, the downfall for me in this movie is whenever they try to force sentiment and try to create affection for a character that does not deserve any sentiment or affection whatsoever. Because Burt Wonderstone is this chauvinistic asshole who is super mean to women, just uses women. However, they try to make a way to bring on, not really sappy, just kind of like a lighthearted awe moment for his character. And unfortunately, that happens in a lot of Steve Carell-esque movies, to whereas you look at, say, Anchorman, Will Ferrell's Anchorman, to where the movie is just comedy, 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 and they make fun of doing the whole thing of having like the sentiment feeling bad for the character moment of the movie that happens at the end of Anchorman. They just kind of they make fun of them. They make fun of those movies, and they make fun of themselves having to put that in the script, I guess. And that's what Burt Wonderstone should have done. Instead of making something, you know, more, making it feel real whenever they do some of these magic tricks that are totally unrealistic, that are totally, you know, like nobody could do most of these magic tricks, even though they're trying to make it seem like that nobody can do it. So I don't know, just the tone of the movie just really didn't kind of mesh well together. But I thought Jim Carrey did really well, and a lot of the side gags and all the side cheeky comments that kind of happened throughout the entire movie, opposed to the big stunt gags that happens a lot in the trailers, I love the small gags. Like when Steve Buscemi, when Anton leaves, he goes to Kenya or some third world African country, and he's being interviewed.
Like Cambodia or something, yeah.
Yeah, 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 he's like, I'm here, I'm here, and, you know, these children really need something, and I'm bringing the gift of magic to them all. And it turns out all these kids wanted was water, so he comes back to America, you know, because, you know, and, like, they kind of make something up. He's like, oh, I heard you were in Cambodia, and it's like, yeah, I was there, but it turns out the kids didn't want magic. They wanted water. And it's just like a really awkward kind of like moment right then. And just Steve Buscemi just can play this really nice, lovable character, and the sweet character that you can actually feel for, even though this movie is zany and actually have a real life kind of moment with the character, I guess. Kind of like whenever he played Donnie in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, what's his name? The old guy in it.
Alan Arkin. The,
yeah, Alan Arkin. Great, has great lines, is hysterical. And just like the climax of the movie, I hated it because it doesn't really build up to it. But the ending of the movie is hysterical. Whenever they, I'm not going to say what happens, but something happens during this last magic trick that they do, this spectacular magic trick, where you wonder how they do it, and right before the credits, they actually show you how they did it. And that sealed the deal for the movie for me, because I just wanted to see that moment, and you do see it, and it is pretty damn funny, I gotta say. So, I mean, if you can pay $6 to go see this movie, I'd say go for it, but, you know, I think it's, you know, it's worth watching. But then again, I saw it with a ton of people. I mean, the theater was packed. So.
Yeah, I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. It was better than I expected it to be. I would definitely say matinee worthy.
Yeah.
It is matinee worthy. Check it out.
Good to know.
There you go. Outstanding. Well, then I guess, let's see, our movies for next week are going to be Breakdown, Sleepwalk With Me, and a documentary on Netflix instant streaming. Sleepwalk With Me is also available on instant streaming by Netflix. Netflix instant streaming, sure, something like that, whatever. Is this other one is a documentary. It's part of the 30 for 30 series from ESPN, and it's called Broke. And this is a documentary, really more single camera interview than anything else, but it collectively kind of explains how professional sports people in all different sports. It's not just NFL. It's NBA. It's NHL. It's MLB. I mean, you get a very good blending here. And exactly just what the hell happens to all that money. And it was really interesting. I saw it, so that's why I'm recommending it to these guys. And I'm very anxious to hear what you guys think. So
cool.
Check it out. The 3 Squared for next week is going to be our favorite sequels. Since we did prequels, we're going to do sequels. However, we've tried to limit ourselves. If you use part of the major biggies like Indiana Jones or Star Wars or Star Trek, you can only use one movie. So you can't sit there and say, oh, Temple of Doom and Wrath of Khan and Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi, whatever. You can't, if you need a crutch or you just really feel that strongly about it, you can pick one of those movies from the holy franchises. Other than that, we're going to try and keep it interesting with some real sequels that are not necessarily what people have expected. So, that being said, I guess it's time for the spiel.
Señor Spielbergo.
Yes. See. All right. So, the music you've been listening to, as always, is given to us and lent us just, and given blah, 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 blah. So, as always, the music that you hear. All right. We're going to try this again. I'm tired. All right. So, the music that you've been listening to has been graciously given to us by Cries of Solace. You can check them out at criesofsolace.com, at MySpace, and facebook.com/Cries of Solace. You can also go to Reverb Nation, search, go to Houston, and look up Cries of Solace there as well. If you're interested in checking us out, you can follow us on Twitter at TheSLSCast. You can send us an email to TheSLSCast@gmail.com. You can also check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. And as always, you can just go to our website, SLSCast.com. We thank you very much for listening to us as always, and we hope to catch you guys next week. So thanks again, and see you then.
Cheers.
Adios.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.